We are really fortunate to have listeners like you. These have been tough times for a lot of people, and a lot of public radio organizations are also struggling financially. So if you're doing okay and you value what you get from this station, and you understand the importance of quality media for the fabric of our community, maybe you can pitch in a little extra this time for those who can't. Whatever you can do, we're really glad you're with us. As we examine what it means to travel smartly on today's Travel with Rick Steves, let's check in with one of the most accomplished travel writers of our time. Paul Theroux joins us in an interview we recorded prior to the pandemic, when the biggest thing I had to face was a little node on my vocal cord that was affecting my voice. So, sorry about my weak voice during the interview. Starting with a Peace Corps stint in East Africa, riding the rails across South America, and road tripping the hinterlands of Dixie in Mexico, Paul Theroux has been introducing readers to the places he's been and the people he's met for more than 50 years. With some 50 novels and works of nonfiction, his titles include The Mosquito Coast, The Great Railway Bazaar, Deep South, and On the Plain of Snakes. Paul, thanks for being here.
It's a pleasure, Rick.
Boy, 50 years of great travels, and I don't think you're slowing down. You've taken us on so many trips, too many to mention, but for those of us who don't know all of the books you've written, just take a minute, have some fun here. Lace together your favorites on a little global tour. Be our tour guide. We have a couple of months. Take us on that Paul Theroux global tour.
I started my travel in a library reading. So anyone's travel should begin with reading, I think. Reading about travel, looking at maps, sitting in a library, which in my case was Medford, Massachusetts, where I never bought a book, but I always used the library. And I fantasized about Richard Halliburton, Seven League Boots, The Royal Road to Romance, books about the Antarctic, books about the Canadian wilds, and, you know.
You know, I did the same thing when I was a student. Before I was any of this professional travel stuff, I was at the U, and in the big library, there was a map room with globes and big books of atlases.
Yeah.
And I would go there for my breaks, and I would just fantasize that way.
That's right. And I came from a big family. So there's seven children in the family. And so going to the library, it's peaceful, it's quiet. You've got a comfy chair, and the main library in Medford was like that. And it was really pleasant. So
weave that, together this itinerary
Reading about, I constantly thought about going away. Because of the big family, you want space for yourself. So I went away to college, obviously. And then I thought, I want to go farther. I joined the Peace Corps. So the Peace Corps propelled me into the middle of Central Africa. The country was called Nyasaland. So my travels and also bound up not only with reading, but with writing. So reading made me a traveler. Travel helped me as a writer and liberated me. I wasn't writing about my hometown or my family or my miserable childhood or anything like that. I had a big subject, which was Africa. Joseph Conrad once said, I was a mere animal before I went to Africa. I could say the same thing. You have nothing to write about. Who are you? You go to Africa and you find out who you are, and you see these dazzling sights, elephants, people dancing, students reading books. All my students were barefoot. So then Nyasaland became Malawi, and I had a subject, which was post-colonial Africa. The country became independent, and I published a book called Girls at Play, then Jungle Lovers, then I published novels set in Africa. I went to Singapore after that. I wrote a novel set in Singapore. St. Jack was made into a movie by Peter Bogdanovich. I then went to London. My wife was English, and I was looking for a place to go. And I needed a subject, and I thought, I know what I'll do. Looking at a map, you can take a train from Victoria Station to Paris, Paris to Istanbul, Istanbul onward. I'll just keep going till I get to Japan, you know. At that time, I tried to go to China, but that was during the Cultural Revolution. It was 1973, so obviously that wouldn't have worked. But I took the train from London to Tokyo, back on the Trans-Siberian, and that was a book. So that was The Great Railway Bazaar.
That was kind of your best hit.
Well, it was my first hit, and I realized after I wrote it, that lots of people fantasize about travel. So people wrote letters saying, I'd love to take this trip. I like the book was funny, it was great. And I had struck a nerve with that book because I just picked up and went. And I should say, Rick, that no publisher ever said to me, you know what you should do? You should go here, you should go there. Every trip I thought of after that, the old Patagonian Express, I walked and took trains around Britain for the Kingdom by the Sea. I went to China, took trains. They were all off my own bat, my own money, and my own kind of fantasy of what life would be like there. So after that, I went around the Mediterranean, the Pillars of Hercules. I loved kayaking, and I had a portable kayak, a folding kayak. And so I wrote The Happy Isles of Oceania just by going from island to island, Hawaii, Easter Island, Tonga, the Marquesas, Papua New Guinea, New Zealand, Samoa, the Cook Islands, the Trobriand Islands. I took my boat, paddled around, talked to people, filled up notebooks, and came back and wrote The Happy Isles of Oceania, a book that I still is one of my favorites.
Paul, I'm so fascinated by how prolific you are. And I was reading in your On the Plane of Snakes, a Mexican Journey book, and you wrote about your fiddling with the radio, and you heard a lovely piece of classical music by Schubert, and it soothed you. And you wrote, you read, as you sped onward past the tall grass and the twisted trees. And the music was coming over the border from the United States, and you were in Mexico. And I thought it was so thought-provoking. And I also thought just the practicalities of your driving. You had that moment. What's your process? Did you have a little tiny Moleskine book where you jotted that down and that night you wove it into a paragraph? Or how do you catch those little butterflies?
You write them down. I'm a mad note taker. I keep a diary. I keep a journal. I write every day. I spend an hour, sometimes more, writing everything down. I've always written in longhand. Even the novels I've written, novels, travel books, short stories, journalism, I write in longhand and then I type it. My handwriting is okay. You know, I started when I was in the first grade, we used a quill pen, you know, and so I think it works for me. So
you're really old. But okay, so you're writing it down. That's you got to immediately write it down and then be disciplined to
when you
type it in.
I've even known. So you mentioned the Schubert, for example, and the road. I pulled off the road to write that down because I didn't want to forget it. So lots of times I'm driving down the road in Mexico and elsewhere. If you're on a train, you're writing, looking out the window, writing. If you're in a car, pull over the road. You think of something, see a sign. Think, I want to remember that sign.
Yeah.
You see a billboard. I want to remember what it says on that billboard. You have a hitchhiker. The hitchhiker is talking to you, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Pull off and just continue it. And then at the end of the day, that's in a little notebook. And then at the end of the day, I expand it into a journal.
I'm the same way. I've got these little black Moleskine books. They look like a passport because they're sticking in my shirt pocket and people think I've got my passport there. But that's my little notes. And now that you're listening to you, I can just see you with your hands on the wheel, all these ideas going on. And it's dangerous to be writing while you're driving. Sometimes I jot something down and I can't read it because it's so, I wrote it down so sloppily and quickly. But that's the magic. And when we look back on our travels, there's those little moments that you get so much mileage out of in your writing.
Yes.
But you got to have those moments.
I think also you want to preserve the voice of a person. So when someone's talking to you, I've sort of trained myself to remember conversations. So when I have a conversation with, I don't write things down. I'm not a stenographer.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm talking to someone, I'm looking him in the eye and saying, so what was it like? What happened to you when they arrested you? What happened at the festival, at the cemetery, in the bar, whatever it happened with the policeman? And they say, I'll tell you what, so this is what happened. And you looking in the eye. And then as soon as that conversation ends, I absent myself and I write it down. Or if I can, I preserve it and write it down as accurately as possible.
But you've got to have the eye contact to keep that honest conversation going.
Yes,
it's not like you're a reporter taking notes, you're a friend talking.
Absolutely. Because if someone sees you writing, they alter their tone of voice.
Oh, yes, for
and
sure.
They speak more formally. They also get paranoid.
Paul, when people think of Paul Theroux, they think of the Great Railway Bazaar. And I remember just reading in this latest book that for you, you associate your happiest days sitting on a train. And for many, it's just the opposite. Finish us off by letting us sit with you on a train ride somewhere where we can really feel the magic of this kind of travel.
I can think of many train rides. The ideal train ride is the train is traveling along the coast, the waves are breaking, the surf is sort of speckling the windows of the train. The most memorable train ride, I didn't know it at the time, was in Costa Rica. I was traveling from San Jose to Limon through the jungle. I had a copy of The Narrative of Arthur Gordon Pym by Edgar Allan Poe on my lap and a notebook. And I looked out the window and I saw the waves breaking, the palm trees. The train was kind of rattling. I could hear the ocean, it's the Caribbean, breaking on the coast. And I said to a guy, what's the name of this place? And he said, this is the Mosquito Coast. And I thought of the story of a castaway, a family of castaways that might turn up there. And as the train went by and I saw the beach and I saw the trees, and I saw the water, I imagined what the Mosquito Coast meant to me and how I might turn that into something. The best thing in travel is that you bring back something. I brought back the idea for a novel, and that train ride actually changed my life.
Paul Theroux knows how to make reading about travel almost as much fun as being there. Paul was even awarded the Royal Geographic Society's highest honor for encouraging geographical discovery through his writing. His latest novel is about the challenges an aging big wave surfer confronts on Oahu's North Shore. It's called Under the Wave at Waimea. Right now, you're listening to one of today's rare media outlets where the underlying focus is not on selling ads or shareholder profits, but on maintaining journalistic standards. Public service really is the mission of our work here in public radio. The programming on this station takes you from the state capital to world capitals and the far corners of the planet. And it helps you better understand your community's role in the world. I start my days listening to my local public radio station. For me, it's not breakfast without a little quality news coverage. Coverage that's reliable, relevant, and intelligent. It keeps me up to date with our world. I know that what I learn will enrich my life, and it'll help me play a meaningful, enlightened role in my community. They like to say you are what you eat, but you know, I say you are the media you consume. Media shapes us, and one reason I love public radio is because it makes me a person I want to be. Not angry, not afraid. A person who wants to reach out and celebrate the world, to celebrate its diversity, to become friends with the world. Public radio inspires us not to be dumbed down and fearful, but to be engaged, to reach out, to be bold, to celebrate the world, to be friends with the world. During this special fundraising edition of Travel with Rick Steves, we're asking you to do your part. Please make sure your station stays strong with your contribution right now. Thank you.